Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Tom Ray is back with us. I'm always excited to hear from Tom. He's got a great story and pictures to show us about rebuilding and replacing one audio console at a multi-studio radio and TV facility in Hartford, Connecticut. Plus, he'll have a cute story, kind of a sad story, about his inspection program, an ABIP inspection. It's all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support. Online at Nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, so delighted to be with you here. It is our usual Thursday afternoon live show, 4 o'clock in the Central Time Zone where I am. It's 5 o'clock where Tom Ray is, and also where Suncast is, our producer for today's show. Chris Tarr's not here today. I'm not sure if he's okie-dokie or what, but I thought he was going to be here, but he's not. Maybe he'll show up during the show. Sometimes Chris does that for us. All right. I'm in the Nashville studios of the Telos Alliance, as you can see, lights and screens all around me, and got a new camera. We'll get your opinion on how this looks. It looks a little better. I'm not sure I've got the colors all corrected. I look a little green on my forehead to me, but who knows? I've also got a new monitor, so the monitor could be green for all I know. It's our 666th episode. In fact, hey, Suncast, would you put that lower third back on there again? I want everybody to see. And then I want Tom Ray's picture to come in, you know, behind that. This is episode 666. There's plenty of jokes out in the plenty of jokes out there in the universe about episode about the number 666. You know, maybe you take it seriously, maybe you don't. I don't know. We'll see if Tom Ray takes it seriously. Tom, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. Glad you're here.
Thanks, Kirk. And, you know, the number 666 is perfect there. And if you had your red light behind you up in the attic window, it would be even better.
You know, what? Probably the most recent joke I've heard about that number is this woman is checking out at some store, and the cashier says, yes, ma'am, that comes to $6.66. And the woman says, oh, that'll never do. I'm not going to pay that much. Hang on a second. And she goes and she's like, I don't know. She gets a corn dog or something like that. I'm not sure what kind of store she, but she gets a corn dog, add this to the bill, and it comes up, you know, and now it's, you know, $8.12. And, you know, the punchline is, well, it's good to know that this woman is out there fighting off Satan with a corn dog.
I love it.
So, and there's even controversy as to whether 666 is actually the mark of the beast, the number of the beast. You know, there's different interpretations, and the fact is I don't know. So it's just a number, and I'm going to live my life you know, as best I can. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing good. Been busy, and you know, I was going to say the 666, that happens to be the last three digits of my son's phone number, and it fits in perfectly. So,
Oh my gosh, okay.
And well, if he's watching, you know, he's going to kill me.
We could do like hotels do and skip the 13th floor. We could just skip episode 666. We could blame it on Suncast and say Suncast lost the episode. We did it, but it's not here. So we could do that. We could blame it on me. We could just say I miscount. We could do like Donald Trump and just skip 10 floors, you know, and just move right up to, you know, 676. Well,
no. We have to say we have the 10 floors, even though we don't.
Yeah. So, all right, Tom, it's good to see you again. Tom used to be regular as a co-host or a multi-host on This Week in Radio Tech back when we got started, and he's with us from time to time. Tom, before we jump in and give the usual Nautel announcement, tell us what today's show is all about.
We're going to start with actually a tour of one of the facilities I take care of, but the gist of this whole thing was that we had a console die. And and we had to buy a console, had to buy it in a hurry. And it took me like a day to put the thing in and configure it, and we were done. And if this were 20 years ago, if this were 20 years ago, it would have taken me 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. I know. We're going to hear that's quite a lead in. Console died. Had to get one in. You'll give us the details as we go along here. That's coming up from Tom Ray, and I know we'll have a lot of fun things to discuss, and you know the usual discussions about other things in radio. Tom, I understand that you've been traveling. Your name came up in conversation just yesterday, Tom, doing some engineering.
Was that in vain or not?
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. Are you doing some engineering out in Utah? Do you have a customer in Utah?
I've got some engineering work I've done out in Nevada, and okay. I actually do ABIP inspections for 7 states. Utah is not one of them. So,
I was confused. It was Nevada where your name came up. Yeah, my Western states. I'm kind of weak on the geography out there.
You need to go back to school and study geography, Kirk.
I get my Utahs and my Nevadas confused. Hey, Tom Ray is with us, and our show is brought to you in part by Nautel, and they're doing their usual good job of these Transmission Talk Tuesday discussions. Now, they had one just a couple days ago. It was part one of a transmitter site discussion, and part two is coming up on October, I want to say it's the 31st. Suncast, if you can put that graphic up of the website, if you go to nautel.com/webinars and click on Transmission Talk Tuesday, yes, it is indeed. October 31st, transmitter site considerations, and they're going to be talking about air handling and cooling. And you know, there are, you've probably seen them too, as many different ways to handle air conditioning and air cooling and air handling as there are transmitter sites. There's lots of ways to do it well, lots of ways to do it mediocre, and even more ways to do it wrong. I've probably seen, like you, more ways to do it wrong. And, you know, there's usually a way to improve just about anything. So if you sign up for this Transmission Talk Tuesday for October 31st, you'll get reminded about it a day before and an hour before. And that's the only emails that you'll get about it. You can join in. You can just listen, be an inactive participant. In other words, you can just watch the webinar or listen to it or the discussion, or you can actively participate. You can raise your hand. You can submit a question beforehand, whatever you like. And if you want to say something, hey, Jeff Welton will be glad to put you on and let you talk to their expert guests. And just, you know, get some discussion going about it. That's why it's called a Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtable discussion. But I really appreciate Nautel doing this for our broadcast industry, and they always pick good topics, and this is certainly one of them. In fact, I've always loved this topic. I'm not saying I'm an expert at it, but the very first industry article that I ever wrote for Broadcast Engineering Magazine, this must have been 35 years ago, I wrote an article about air handling and cooling. And that was back in the days when you got the magazine and you had the little bingo card that you'd, hey, I'm wanting more information on this article or that article. And I got a bunch of requests for more information from different big three-letter radio networks. I thought, oh, that's kind of impressive about that. And I, you know, I kind of knew what I was talking about, but not as much as I do now, or as much as the experts are going to be on this Nautel thing. Nautel.com/webinars, Transmission Talk Tuesday, and sign up to register. It's free, and they won't spam you. They'll just remind you that the meeting's coming up. All right. Tom Ray is with us. Tom, first of all, yeah, again, welcome back. Glad you're here. Haven't seen you in a while.
And Jeff Walton's going to get this Nautel thing, right?
Oh, yeah. He's the host. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's Halloween. Now, is he going to hand out candy this year, or is he going to eat it all like he did last year?
That's a good question.
Yeah. There you go.
Good question. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Don't know. Sorry. Yeah. Jeff advertises that he's eating healthy and walking the dogs on a regular basis. So, you know, maybe he will eschew the candy.
Chocolate technically is a plant.
have you seen the price of candy lately? Holy moly. I was at my local Kroger store, actually at the pharmacy, yesterday, and I picked up some vegetables and stuff while I was there. And they have the big bags of Halloween candy sitting near the door, so you'll remember it going in, or you could steal it going out. And that's $30 for a big bag of handout individually wrapped chocolate candies. $30.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Yeesh.
Fortunately, and you haven't been to my house, Tom, but I live up it sounds fancier than it is. I live up a private driveway. No trick-or-treaters have ever come by here. Not once.
No
ever.
Kidding.
Never. Wow. Well, there's no sidewalk, and the driveway is like this.
Well, what's sad is we moved in here on Halloween 25 years ago. And I think we had 110 kids that night. Now we're lucky if we get five.
Really?
Lucky if we get five. Well, most of the neighborhood is aged and nobody sold the houses and the kids have moved away and it is what it is, you know.
Well, there are neighborhoods in Nashville that are so popular for Halloween. A couple of them are over near Vanderbilt University. And it's grad students that may already have some children. It's some college professors or assistant professors. And so you've got a lot of kids and people come from all over town to those neighborhoods. People, they have a pumpkin contest and they'll have, you know, 150 entries in that. And then people, you know, decorate their houses a lot. And some of them pretty classy too. So you can find the right neighborhoods, but my neighborhood ain't one of them.
When my daughter was in vet school, she was right off the traffic circle in the center of town. And they would close the traffic circle and they would close the center of town. And her and her roommates had 300 kids that first Thanksgiving, the first Halloween they were there. And everybody was dressed, mom, dad, the kids, the dog, didn't matter. Everybody was dressed and they just had a great time.
Huh? You know, years ago, I was at an AES convention in New York City, in Manhattan, right downtown. And family happened to be there. My son, Michael, was of trick-or-treating age. And we didn't know what to expect. So we all had some costumes. We walked around the streets of Manhattan, not far from Broadway and, you know, the various streets there. And we didn't go up into buildings, but the shop owners were all doing trick-or-treating. So, yeah, we got... Son got lots of candy in Manhattan.
But you had to do it right. You had to go, hey, trick or frickin' treat.
Trick or frickin' trick or treat. Yeah. Oh, gosh. All right. Well, here we are in episode 666, and you have a client that you do engineering for, and it is a religious organization. Tell me about that.
Yes, it is the Archdiocese of Hartford. They have a radio station, WJMJ. Since the station's inception in the early to mid-70s, they were a Class B with the transmitter located in Burlington, Connecticut, which is I'm going to say 17 miles out of Hartford. And the main problem with their signal was it always hit the top of Avon Mountain. So no matter what you did in the city of license, it would picket fence. So at one point, you know, Father John Gatzak, he's the head of the Office of Radio and Television, and he said, you know, I want to go HD. And I said, not from where the transmitter is. It's not going to work. So we, you know, did a study and took a look, and we found that we could move to Rattlesnake Mountain, which is about 12 miles out of Hartford. There are five television stations, an FM that actually I put on that tower in 1983. And we are 950 feet up that tower, so 1,450 feet above average terrain with a Class B signal. We went from a B1 to a B, and somehow we could fit the HD in at minus 10. I have no idea how that happened in the Northeast. But anyway, so I've been taking care of that, and their chief engineer, they also have a television side. They do a lot of television production. They do a live television mass every day. And they do several public affairs shows for the television stations in town. And I took over the TV side about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, when their chief engineer retired. So, So what I figure we'll do is we're going to, in a minute, we'll take a tour around the facility. But what happened was we have a backup air studio at this facility, and it had an Element console, Axia Element, and the engine died. Yeah. It was a power station engine, and well, the console went dark. We walked in, and usually on the front of an Axia engine, if someone's not familiar with them, you know, it tells you the power supply unit's up. It tells you you're on the network. It tells you numerous things. And the only light on the thing was the power supply. And I went, okay. Tried rebooting it, didn't work, called tech support, and they had me try a couple things, and that didn't work. And they said, well, here's the bad news. We don't make the power station anymore. Mm-hmm. Here's the worst news. The element is not compatible with anything else. Oh boy.
Ah. Yeah.
So now we had to come up with a console, and Father John had to record the Archbishop's show like within 2 days or 3 days. And it was like, okay, well, let's take a look at what's there. And I was a little bit disappointed because the choice was the Radius console mm-hmm. or the,
Quasar?
The Quasar console. But there was nothing in between. So,
gotcha.
You know, even though this is a backup air studio, Father John uses it mostly, and it doesn't get a lot of heavy use or heavy production use. So the Radius was, we could use it. And the Quasar was overkill. And if we bought a Quasar, I would have put that in the main air studio, because that's the showpiece. So we ended up going with a Radius, which Father John happens to love. So, and like I said before, normally if this were 20 years ago and this were an analog console, probably would have taken me 2 weeks to get the thing configured, put in, get the wiring straightened out, get everything taken care of. It took me about 5 hours.
Oh, and wow. Yeah.
It was all together. It does everything it needs to do. It sees all the sources it needs. And matter of fact, about an hour after I was finished, Father John said, can I record the Archbishop? I said, knock yourself out. And he did. And then he went, this is great. I said, yeah, it's a nice console. So, let's take a look first. Let's take a look around the facility. Some of these pictures may be out of order, but, this is the radio rack room. They're using Zeta Automation. They've got an HD2 and an HD3. The HD2 is Eternal Word Network in Spanish, which will eventually become a local Hispanic channel. The HD3 is Eternal Word in English. They, believe it or not, as a non-com, they carry ABC News on top of the hour.
Okay.
They've got a couple of Comrex accesses. They've got a Telos phone system, which is in the rack here. On the 67 kilohertz subcarrier, they carry the Reading for the Blind service, Connecticut Radio Information Service. That actually comes in and gets inserted at the transmitter. For those who say, HD, no one listens to HD. Well, when we put the HDs on the air, we were sitting in the rack room here, finishing up some wiring behind the rack. And we were listening to the HD3. And for a religious network, Eternal Word has some pretty progressive talk programming. And we're listening to it with their then chief engineer, Mike, and we're just standing there. And Father John, the only way you knew we were HD was on the top of the RID. Father John wanted to make a big splash that coming Sunday with all the parishes and have it announced all at once that we went HD. And while we're standing there, the guy's, taking phone calls, and he goes, let's go to Hartford, Connecticut on WJMJ. And we're like, excuse us? Somebody heard it. Somebody found it on the HD3. Go figure. But this is the rack room. We've got distribution amps. We are using broadcast tool switchers. We've got ESE GPS clocks, console engines. This is a complete. This is a big Telos Alliance plant. You've got Axia consoles. You've got Omnia processing. You've got Telos telephones. But the only thing we don't have is a Telos switcher, which you guys don't make like broadcast tools do. But everything's here and everything's Telos.
I see some of the Zipstream R1, the streaming encoders in the rack.
Yep, that's how we stream.
Yeah.
We stream out of those, and we're actually using the processing in those, which sounds pretty good actually.
Yeah. They come with the 3-band processing and it sounds fine. It smooths everything out.
So let's take a look at a couple other pictures. Let's continue our tour.
Okay.
That is my son, and this is production room number one, where they do a lot of production. He's actually a television director, but he does a lot of audio production. And they use Adobe Audition, and they can actually bring up stuff from the television router in here, and they've got a television monitor in there. If they needed to, they could put this room on the air if the console up in the television production control room quits. So this is, you know, production one. They've got three production rooms. Let's take a look at another one. This is Father John's studio, and that is the replacement console. That's the Radius. We bought the, I call it the sidecar. We bought the expansion module for it.
So it's got a total of 16 faders. Yeah.
Yep. Which is great. And it works like a champ. Let's take a look at another one here.
Okay.
And that's a close up of it. That's what it looks like if you were sitting there operating it. I mean, it's got the, you know, it's got the metering, it's got the, each pot, it tells you what's on each pot with the OLED displays. It's a nice little console. We use the 8-channel one for the Car Doctor show that I do. But this is a, I mean, this works well. It works for what they need, and it's easy to install. And it, like I said, it's a workhorse. It just works. You can't.
Now, I notice on all the channels but one, you've got each channel assigned to program one, but not to programs 2, 3, and 4. And I just want to point out that if you push more of the buttons, you get more of the lights light up.
Oh, yes.
And more meters wiggle.
it looks a lot prettier, but I'll put number two. I forget what output number two does, but output number four is for the telephone. And for example, for the Archbishop, that's on a Comrex because he's over at the, he's over in downtown Hartford. And that's a mix minus that's built into the consoles, which is wonderful. I don't know what we did 20 years ago without built in mix minus that you could just put something on a fader, turn it up, and there it is.
Well, you know, and we should spend 10 seconds explaining that. You know, most people use a bus to create a mix minus. And if you need to create two mix minuses that are different from each other, well, you're using two buses. And if you need to create three mix minuses, you've used typically all the extra buses that you have in addition to program one. But modern consoles, and I don't know about other brands, but certainly all the Axia consoles, every single fader can make its own mix minus. So you don't have to use a bus. You don't have to punch up any buttons. The operator, the disc jockey, whoever's running the board really can't make a mistake. The fader itself puts out a mix minus of everything except what's on that fader. And you can change that. It doesn't have to be everything else. It can be based on a different bus, but typically it's based on program one, and it puts out everything but what's on everything is on program one except for that fader, which is what you want typically in a mix minus. So for a lot of engineers, I got that explained to me literally 20 years ago. So I've been kind of had that in my head for 20 years, but for a lot of people, that's a new concept. And so if you need 16 mix minuses, they're already there.
Which is great, you know, especially in television, or if you're doing live sports. Years ago when I worked at WTIC in Hartford, we used to carry the University of Connecticut, both men and women, and we would do the pregame show for the men, and we'd start at a bar in downtown Hartford. We'd bring in the men's play-by-play team, the men's play-by-play team, and if we had somebody out in the parking lot in Gamble Pavilion, we'd bring them in at the same time, and that was a mix minus. That was actually, that unit was built by me. And the operator had to pay attention because, boy, if he hit the wrong button, all of a sudden they're hearing echoes in their headphones, and it's not good. It's not good when that happens.
Hey, Tom, we got to take a quick break, and we're talking to Tom Ray about kind of an emergency studio rebuild. We actually saw the studio that got rebuilt, but we're going to look at more pictures from the Archdiocese of Hartford, right? That's where they produce radio and television programs with the Catholic Church there, right? Okay. Our show is brought to you in part by Broadcast Bionics. And I'm going to tell you about Broadcast. We're going to do a little bit different format for this ad. I have known Dan McQuillan and the other folks at Broadcast Bionics for quite a few years now. Got introduced to them back years ago when the founder of Telos was still alive, Steve Church. Steve and Broadcast Bionics got together because Steve Church thought a lot of how clever the folks at Broadcast Bionics were in coming up with solutions for the sophisticated broadcasters that they have in England. They do some amazingly good programming there for radio and for television. But Bionics had been hired to come up with some good solutions there too. And Suncast, if we could take a look at the Broadcast Bionics main webpage, Bionics has an amazing array of solutions that make basically, you don't have to work any harder, but you get more content out of what you're doing now. For example, they do have a phone system called Caller One. It's a PC-based multi-line phone system. They have, as you've seen ads for on this show, Camera One, which is a PC-based, but it also uses a switcher and a PC and several cameras to give you video coverage of your studio. It doesn't have to be a studio, but it's kind of meant for that. And it interfaces directly with AOIP consoles like Axia consoles to give you automatic camera switching. That's called Camera One. There's something that we haven't talked about much, the Bionic Table. And that's an amazing concept they're using in England, where you have a table with typically four microphones and four headphones. And you walk up to the table, you sit down, and by the very presence of your Bluetooth enabled tablet, it sets everything up for you, and you can start a recorder with your tablet. You can mix the mics on your tablet, and the Bionic Table is just a really cool, amazing device. It's not for everyone. Not everyone needs Bionic Table, but if you do, it is so cool. They also have the Bionic Studio, which is a solution surface, as they say, as to bring forward information about the topic you're talking about. So if you're talking about some new artist, some newsmaker, this information will pop right up. If a caller calls in and wants to talk about, I don't know, Taylor Swift, the latest information about Taylor Swift and where the concerts are and that kind of thing, pop right up. Not that everybody doesn't already know that, who needs to. And then there's the virtual rack. This is a piece of technology that Dan McQuillan has been on the show recently to talk about. And virtual rack is an idea where, you know, these virtualized pieces of broadcast functionality that I've been talking about for years now, audio consoles and audio processing and phone systems and things like that. Now you can install them easily because you click on an icon and they install. You still license them through their respective manufacturers, but you get these things running virtually in a server that's supplied by Broadcast Bionics and the software surrounding that makes it all easy. It takes care of a lot of details under the hood that normally you'd either have to do yourself or hire, for example, the technicians at Telos Alliance to do for you. So Broadcast Bionics, they just have this amazing array of just terrific broadcast solutions, very sophisticated. And I'm not saying they're high priced. Sure, big broadcasters use them, but they have plenty of small broadcasters too. In fact, I see Suncast has dropped down the products list there, and it's just huge. All the different things that they make and make available to you, including Skype TX for Radio, Anywhere, which is a phone-based app that gives you high quality audio back to the station, Virtual Rack, as I mentioned, and they're a dealer for Axia audio consoles too. So they work closely with BBC and other big broadcasters, not only in England but around the world. So I really appreciate Broadcast Bionics and what they bring to the table for you and me, broadcast engineers. You put Broadcast Bionics stuff in, you're gonna look good. And that's part of what it's all about. Enhance your career. The website, bionics.co.uk or singular, bionic.radio, will get you to Broadcast Bionics. They have dealers all over the world, too. So, look around for your favorite dealer and see if they carry Broadcast Bionics. All right, we're here with Tom Ray. And Tom is taking us through the story. Yeah, Tom?
Hello.
Oh, hi. Let's continue with the pictures. If Suncast wants to pop another picture up, we'll take the tour.
This is Audio Production 2. We didn't shoot Audio Production 3. That's Steve Savino, the program director. Very basic. It's just got they can voice track in this room. They can actually do production, and that's it. That's it for this room. There's not much there. If we move along,
okay,
we see this is the main air studio.
Oh, okay.
So they're running, Zeta Automation. It's got the Element console, little wall time action there on the wall. What the studio live means is when they go to ABC News, because they are a non-com, the spot has to be covered. So rather than have to have the jock sit there and cover the spot, we take it back to automation. So the studio goes dead, and then at the end of the newscast, it gets thrown back and Studio Live comes on and they turn on the mic and off they go and start talking about the local news.
Tom, have I seen a total now of four studios with consoles, two prod rooms and
one, two, three, four. Yes. You won't see the fifth. And there's another one coming up. You're going to like,
oh, okay. Okay.
But this is, this is the main air studio. This is where the jocks do their thing all day, every day. Mm-hmm. They are live from 5 a.m. until 7 p.m. And, even on Sunday. So, let's move to the next one. This is the main set for the live television mass every day. Mm-hmm. Stained glass windows came from the original St. Joseph's Cathedral in Hartford that burned down many years ago. They do at 10 o'clock in the morning every day. They do a live mass sometimes, well, a couple of times a week. My son directs. I'll tell you a story before we go about him when he directed Christmas this year. but this is the television studio. If we go to another shot, this is what it looks like on the other side. And the two sets for the public affairs shows, they're running Sony cameras, all 1080i video.
Public affairs is on the other side. They just turn the cameras around and they can shoot the public affairs set, right?
Yep. That's it.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
And if we move along.
I got to tell you, Tom, I don't know if I've ever been in a TV studio that didn't have a green screen for doing weather. So that's
they do have a green screen. It's called up at the top, but they don't use it usually.
Okay.
Interesting. This is television central control, where camera control units and they still call them VTRs, but they're video disc recorders and everything else. Everything television comes through this room. With a couple of patch cords to boot. And if we move along, this is the, that's the video switcher. This is a production control. That's a 10-year-old Ross HD switcher. And if we look at the next one, if this is the one I think it's going to be, yes, it is. There's the Element console. So the Element console is at the back of the room with the audio control person. They can obviously pull up anything in the facility. They usually keep all the mics and such in the studio up on this board.
Tom, I got a question about running audio for television, and I may sound a little snarky when I ask this question, but I do mean it in all seriousness. I've been to several TV stations that use an Axia console, which is kind of designed to be a radio console, as their mixing console. And, but I've talked to plenty of TV stations that, kind of turn their nose up and say, well, that's not a TV console. We really can't use that. And yet most TV stations I've been in that have a big console with lots of knobs, dozens and dozens and dozens of knobs, most of those knobs have dust on them. They never get touched. Yep. There's eight faders that they use on a regular basis and they don't touch anything else. Why? Now I get 5.1. Okay. This console, we made a 5.1 version of this console, but this console generally is used for stereo. What is it about a radio console that is supposedly not appropriate for most simple television production?
Well, with a lot of TV facilities, I think it goes back to, the separation of radio and television. I mean, you're a television guy. You do pictures. So we need the big console because we need to do this. We need to do that. We need to do the other. To your point before about all the mix minuses, where a console like this comes in really handy is, for example, if you do a network newscast, if you ever went up to ABC television, ABC World News Tonight, they've got a huge console and every pot is mix minused. So, because they bring in, During a half hour newscast, they'll bring in at least 10, if not 15, outside people that they're talking to, and everybody's on a different pot, and it's right there before the broadcast. So the audio guy knows everybody's here, everything's there, all is present and accounted for. But for whatever reason, they like the big console, probably because they can just lay out everything they need right now. We don't typically need to do that. Hey, quiet guys. Excuse me, the dogs are here.
It's all right. No worries.
But the, we do use mix minus here. For example, we've got an electric piano/organ down in the studio. and we mix minus that so the organist can hear himself, but not the mix, so he can hear what the organ's doing.
Right.
And, you know, we do a couple of other mix minus things, mix minus tricks, actually. But
I know that some TV stations, some TV stations really like to have submixes, and radio consoles typically don't have submixes, although that's becoming an option in some radio consoles. So submixes are one thing that radio typically doesn't do that TV says they want.
Right. And I've never understood that, because if you've got 20 pots on the board, you've already got your submix, just know where the pots are, know what's where. That's the radio guy and me talking, because that's how we do it.
Exactly. Okay. Well, good to see that. And by the way, I've been to that audio booth at ABC World News Tonight in Manhattan. I put a Telos VX VoIP phone system in there, and the audio guy, the A1 guy, the night we put it in, and they had two phoners that night. On ABC World News Tonight. And when the show was over, the A1 guy turns around to me and my colleague, and he says, "You know, this sounds pretty good." He says, "Even the dial tone sounds better." I didn't have the heart to tell him that with VoIP, you know, the dial tone is locally generated, but whatever.
That's okay. It's a good dial tone. It's a good dial tone.
Yeah.
Well, let's move along. We'll finish up our tour, and then we'll talk about putting the console in. Okay, we saw that. That's the radio rack room. Yeah, maybe we're done. We might be
okay.
Okay. Right. So anyway, yeah. So when we put the console in, you know, we needed the console, called around, you know, we used Broadcasters General Store, who's a big Axia dealer. And, you know, we found out that, you know, we basically had two choices. So we chose the Radius, and said, get it to us now. You know, we bought the Core 32 engine because it has more capabilities than the Core 16. And we needed to bring in a bunch of outside stuff from that studio that Core 16 wouldn't have been able to handle with the additional 8 pots. So we bought the Core 32 and said, get it to us like ASAP, like yesterday. And sure enough, the next day I was there and I was walking through the lobby, and here came UPS, and 3 boxes got offloaded. And I said, perfect.
So let me ask, those 3 boxes, you had the 8-channel main part. That's the part of the console that has the meter bridge. And then you had the 8 channels of expansion. But you also had a new mixing engine, which that's the part that got old and failed anyway. And that was the old power station, right?
Right. And the only reason we replaced the console was that the element is not compatible with anything else right now. We also had an option of purchasing a remanufactured power station engine. And actually, Broadcaster General Store had an older one on the shelf that was brand new. And we want something because we couldn't get this one fixed. We wanted something that if something happened to it, we could send it in and go fix this, please.
Gotcha.
So, we put the thing in. There were about 4 or 5 sources in the studio that were, that were plugged into the into the analog ports and the AES ports on the engine. So I got I labeled those. I knew what those were. I made sure they were labeled. Pulled everything out. Plugged the engine in. Plugged those things in. You know, wrote down, where I plugged them in. Fired the thing up and sat there for the next hour and a half and said, okay, I need this, I need this, I need this, go find this, go pull this from that studio, go pull this from over there, pull this from the rack room. And I assigned them to all the pots, and literally it was like a 4 to 5 hour job, and it was done. And it was absolutely fantastic. Wow. Set up the mix minuses. So the telephone has to be a mix minus. The Archbishop has to be a mix minus. The Sports Comrex has to be a mix minus. Mm-hmm. We set all those up and said, okay, knock yourself out, break it, go ahead and break it.
Do you use any of the mic processing that's built in?
Yes, as a matter of fact, both in the Air Studio and in Father John's studio, we do use the mic processing. We tried it in the production rooms, and some of the people complained because they weren't used to processing in there, so we backed off on it and let them do it in Adobe Audition. We use it there, and it's actually, while it's not let's say the Wheatstone M1, it's not a Wheatstone M1 by any means, but it's more than adequate and it sounds good. and it's easy to adjust.
Yeah. So. Certainly, there are engineers who love the Wheatstone M1 processor. Most people, the processing that's in most of the was in the Fusion and is certainly now in the IQ series. It's your basic three band semi parametric EQ and downward expander. Some people call it a gate, but it's really also a downward expander, de-esser, and a basic compressor with or without a freeze function. And then there's makeup gain you can dial in afterwards. If you're doing too much compression to knock it down, you may want some makeup gain afterwards.
Yeah, and actually, I use the audio processing on the Car Doctor show. I use it on Ron's mic, and with the and I'm pulling a blank on the software. We have a software package that lets me control the Radius console at his house. And I show up on clean feed and I use it on the clean feed going into the board. So I'm processed as well. So we're both processed and we're both using the same type of mic. So, it sounds like I'm in the room with the guy. So
Wow.
Can't complain about it. It works.
Tom, I'd love to hear about some of your other projects as well and any wrap up on this project. Tom, you can actually help me with this next advertisement. This is a product I'm going to show you that I just started using for good reason. It's the Henry Engineering Back UPS. Now, we've talked about this a couple times in the past, but I just built this radio station in Oxford, Mississippi. And I've got two equipment racks at the transmitter site. And at the transmitter site, that's where we have everything. Automation playout, the audio console, which is that Axia Altus. We remotely access that. We remotely access the automation, obviously. The phone system, the Telos VX phone system is out there. The transmitter, of course, is out there. The audio processing, both an Omnia 11 for the main FM and Omnia 9s for the HD 2 and 3. And those are in software. But here's what the deal is. In one rack, I've got most of the equipment that has two power supplies, like the various Dell servers that I have out there and a couple other items that just come with two power supplies. However, in the other rack, it just happened to lay out that I had other computers and other devices that sadly only have one power supply in them. And boy, by golly, I want that one power supply to always have power. So what did I do? Well, in the rack with things with two power supplies, of course, one power strip in the rack just gets, you know, AC power from the wall. And the other power strip gets AC power from a big UPS in the bottom. But if the UPS dies, so what? These devices still have two power supplies. But over in the other rack, I've got some our playout computers, for example, only have one power supply. Now, their server has two, and it's wired, you know, to both things. But for critical things that have one power supply, this back UPS is great. Because the back UPS lets you get power into it from your UPS, but also from your what I would call shore power, you know, your commercial power. And if the UPS dies, and by golly, I've had some expensive UPSs to just up and die, and leaving us off the air, even though there was commercial power available, they were so stupid, they wouldn't even pass commercial power. So off the air till somebody can get to the station and push a button, literally. Ugh, so frustrating. The back UPS solves that problem. This thing is terrific. It's got switches on there to let you set a time delay. How much time do you want it, to go by before you, switch back to the UPS? Are we sure the UPS is going to stick with us? It also has some remote control capability and remote indication. And so it doesn't handle just gobs and gobs of power. It handles what about 15. Amps, I believe. Yeah, 15 amps out of that duplex outlet that's on there. So, you know, that I've got, you know, like I said, several computers with one power supply running off of a power strip that is fed by the back UPS. And the UPS, of course, normally it's just passing UPS power through it. But should that UPS die, well, we automatically switch over on those items that normally don't have the ability to do that. This really helps us out. Plus, we can do things like reconfigure the UPS if we need to, make sure its settings are correct, test it That's important. And even change the batteries. And we don't have to worry about even half second of lost airtime. This thing switches over right away. Tom, what do you think about this product? I have just loved putting this thing in. It works great.
I think it's about time somebody came out with it, because you've been able to get something like that, you know, for a while now, but it's been awfully expensive, and guaranteed the Henry one isn't going to break the budget. And how many times have you sat there and you're right, the UPS dies, or what if the battery goes bad in the UPS unexpectedly, which happens? And the thing goes down and the UPS is too stupid to go, oh gee, let me give you real power.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You know, now you're driving, you know, 2 hours at 2 a.m. to get up there to move a bunch of plugs, which is not a good thing. So I think this is a great idea.
And you're right. There are similar products available. I think APC makes one. I know other companies do too. And they are kind of spendy. Now they may be, may handle more current. I don't know. This really didn't come across my radar until Hank Landsberg at Henry Engineering came out with it. You can get these at Broadcaster's General Store. I know we've gone on and on about it, but I had to tell you the rationale and why I'm such a believer in having this. Even if you have, you know, a rack with two power strips, you may have equipment. In fact, I'm sure you do. That only has one power supply in it. And this is how you keep that thing powered. Broadcaster General Store, check them out at bgs.cc and their phone number. Give them a call because they are so good on the phone. Nice people to do phone with. 352-622-7700 for Broadcaster General Store. All right, we're talking to Tom Ray here. Tom?
To be honest with you, Kirk, it handles 15 amps. That's usually more than enough for most racks, you know, because you don't really have a lot of heavy duty stuff in a rack. You got a whole boatload of computers, but audio processors and, you know.
And like you always would do with a UPS, don't plug a space heater in and don't let the cleaning crew plug their vacuum cleaner into it.
Oh, I had that happen one day. We had a server in the newsroom at a station. And the morning girl was doing something afterwards, and she plugged her hair dryer into the UPS.
Oh.
Down went the server in morning drive.
No.
And of course, it had to rebuild its RAID array, and it was taking its sweet time. And the news director calls me screaming, hollering, yelling. I said, what would you like me to do? I'm not the one who plugged the stupid hair dryer in. You know, seriously.
And I mean, it's an honest mistake from non-technical people. I don't know how you solve that unless you just take extraordinary labeling precautions. And then people still, you know, sometimes ignore the labels.
A big lock and an electric shock on the door. That would do it.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. The bathroom's down the hall. Plug in down there. That's fine. That's there's a big mirror down there too. So you can poof your hair just fine. All right. Tom, do you have more to tell about on the emergency rebuild? So yeah, you have said a couple times during the show that if this was an analog console, you would have spent a couple of weeks doing the wiring, laying things out, punching down to punch blocks. I mean, if a console was available that had exactly the same, you know, wiring connection scheme, maybe it wouldn't take quite that long. But I hear you. Ever since I started putting in AOIP consoles, literally 20 years ago, I have refused to put in an analog console. I didn't want to spend 3-4 days on my back punching things down and running individual wires and crimping things. That's not what I want to do with my life.
You're sitting there crimp. With these consoles, you plug in an RJ45 connector and plug in a RJ45 adapter on the other end. I was going to say from radio systems, but nowadays from Angry Audio, and it just sits there and works. And it's great. And you configure it and you walk away. They're wonderful. Now there are a couple of analog consoles on the market that do use the RJ45 connectors. And those are pretty easy to set up. But the AOIP is just so flexible. I mean, in this case, you know, we're bringing in stuff from the rack room. We're bringing in stuff from the main studio. We're bringing in stuff from someplace else. There was no wiring. It was all software configuration, and it was really easy. Real simple.
Well, in your case, those external sources were already on the AOIP network. So you plug one RJ45 in from the main switch, and all those things are now available to the console.
Right. Correct. In both directions. So program from the console was there. The mix minus feeds were there. The incoming was all there, all on one cable. And it just made life so easy. And even if even if you didn't have some of the stuff, like when we switched automation systems and when we put the Zeta in, it just made a lot of sense to go, you know, with an Axia audio driver on the computer, and now it became part of the network. Where would you like that audio to go? You mm-hmm. didn't have to mm-hmm. wire anything. You didn't have to pull a cable. You didn't have to crimp anything. Just done. And it was great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunately, let's say that you had made a backup of the configuration of the Element console. Now that console, I mean, the company that I work for, my employer Telos, hasn't made that console in what, 8, 9, 10 years or so. But anyway, if right. you had a backup of it, that backup would not work in the newer console that you put in. That's correct. The bad news. The good news is it only took you an hour and a half, 2 hours to configure the new yep. console.
Right. But this speaks to the longevity of the consoles. You know, I've had some people say to me, well, it's a computerized console. It's not going to last. These consoles were at least 13 years old, if not 14 years old, and they're still running. So, you know, the one in the main air studio, the console is still running. We replaced the engine 2 years ago just because the thing didn't fail. Yeah. We just replaced it just because.
Yeah.
But they just sit there and run. They're great. You know, unless you do something stupid. Like one morning we had the station has a cat because it's literally located. The studio is literally located out in the middle of in the middle of the woods. And they have a couple of cats in the studio to get rid of the mice. And the cat followed Mr. Morning in one day, and the cat sat down on the console and just happened to hit the right key press on the keypad on the console, and it went into program me mode.
Oh, no.
And the poor guy calls me and goes, the console went blank, and here's what it says. I'm like, what? How'd you do? And then it came out. Come to find out, the cat went in the studio, and the cat did that 3 more times. It was like, finally, just keep the cat out of the studio.
That brings to mind a little story, and I'm sure you've got something to tell like this too. Years ago, before there were audio over IP consoles, we had a radio systems console, one of their early ones, but a pretty big one, in a studio. And that was back in the day when your console was the final arbiter of what went on the air. In other words, if your console went off the air, you were off the air, unless you did some quick rewiring, or unless you were smart enough to have a patch bay, which we weren't. So there was a cat, an attack cat, right, to keep the station safe at night in a bad part of town. And the cat would walk across the console, and it would, you know, reprogram buttons on the console. Nowadays, Tom, and maybe you do this, maybe you don't, but nowadays at our stations, none of our consoles do full-time duty on any station. So right. we have, you can use Pathfinder. We happen to use that little free software from the guy in Australia, a Livewire simple delegation switcher. So we take our consoles offline. We just put the automation directly to the transmitter. And that way you can, you know, the console can blow up overnight. It's not, you know, and you won't be off the air. The automation's going directly. Plus we can choose other things. If our automation fails, we can still on our talk station, you know, put, you know, CBS News on at the top of the hour. We can put various talk shows on or sports, you know, through the hour. Yeah, there'll be kind of gross cutaways, but we can remotely, you know, control what goes on even without the automation going in there, since we can switch what goes to the transmitter.
But what was cool with this console is we took it out of programming mode, and of course things were kind of screwed up, and I just said, okay, go here, hit that, bang, everything lined up on the console. It was done. It was all set up again.
Oh, wow. Wow. How easy is that?
The nice thing about the new consoles, you know, and whether it's Axia, whether it's Wheatstone, whether it's SAS, whoever it is, they all have that function, and you can set it up. So, you know, I'm right-handed. I like the mic where my right hand is. Maybe you're left-handed, Kirk. You want the mic on the other side. You never had it there. You can go click, hit a button, boom, it reconfigures.
Exactly.
And there's no off-air time, and there's no hair pulling, which I have very little to pull, and it just makes life so much easier.
As a practical matter, given that example of reconfiguring the console, you know, per shift, one good example was we had at one of my stations, I did get a demo deal from my employer for an enormous Element console. This is the biggest frame they could possibly make. It was way too big for us. I mean, we typically use 5 faders, and this thing had, I don't know, 18 or 20 faders. And
somebody had a Coca-Cola in the control room,
and it dumped over into one of the first 4 fader module, the one that typically the mics are on. And we could have had it fixed, but frankly, us being cheap and TELUS doesn't fix things for free for me. Guess what? We had 16 faders left over, and we needed 5 of them. So I just moved those mics to 4 other faders, moved a couple other things down, did that by remote control. I was in Nashville doing that. They're in Greenville, Mississippi. And I told the jock to load the new profile, and he did. And he said, "Oh, wow, the smoke is cleared, and my mic is back." I said, "Yep, it's going to be that way." So
I love
enjoy.
It. Well, the interesting thing about WJMJ, while it's a religious station, if you listen to it, it takes you a while to figure that out because they run a 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s format, when sometimes throw in Frank Sinatra and Perry Como and the whole bit. And instead of a commercial, you get 60 seconds of the word, and it could be from the Catholics, it could be from the Jews, from the Muslims, from the Protestants, from the Episcopalians. It doesn't matter. They put all this stuff on the air. But what was interesting was the old Buckley station in Hartford. I for those who don't know, I was director of engineering at Buckley Broadcasting for a long time. When the Buckley station was sold, the new owner came in and let the entire air staff go. The next morning, they were working for Father John. Same type of format, and now you got the same voices. And on Saturday night, they do a 50s and 60s all request Saturday night, and the guy uses CD players and uses a different computer, and he's got a button, just click, and the console reconfigures for what he needs, and before he leaves, he goes click and sets it back to normal.
Tom, I set up an Axia console. Yeah, it's easy. I set up an Axia console in Boston, and the overnight guy, and you know, overnight rock and roll jocks can be a little different. Okay. Right?
You think?
We had some kind of the local emergency services. They had some kind of a receiver there in the studio, and we had it on like you could put it on the air, but it wasn't on the A input, so to speak. And he said, "Well, if there's an emergency, how do I get the mayor on the air?" I said, "Well, you just go to that, push that button, dial up the local emergency thing and pot it up." "Well, that's too much. That's too much. I need to be able to put them on the air right away." I said, "Oh, okay. Do you play the DVD player overnight?" "Nope." "Okay, tell you what, when you come in, push this button, grab the overnight show, push it, and DVD will go away, and emergency services will pop up right there, and you can put the emergency guy on the air instantly, just like that." He's, wow.
He was his best friend.
That was his best friend. Hey, Tom, we got one more quick segment. When we come back, I want to hear about your best ABIP adventure. Have you got a quick 2-minute story for that for us?
Oh, I've got all kinds of stories.
I'm sure you do. Tom is an ABIP inspector. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Angry Audio. And we're going to see the Angry Audio website. Angry Audio, this is run by my pal, former boss, actually, Mike Dosh. And they make an amazing array of things that you need for your studio. And they're getting more and more sophisticated. Signal light gadget, a software audio processor, the C4 audio processor. They make the headphone disconnector. And of course, if you need studio hub adapters like Tom Ray was talking about, Mike Dosh just had a brilliant idea. As the folks at Studio Hub were winding down their business at Radio Systems, Mike said, "You know, this is important. This is important to our industry. This needs to continue." And so Mike Dosh, Angry Audio, bought out the inventory and the tooling and the intellectual property of radio systems, including the Studio Hub product line. And so if you need Studio Hub adapters, and I use them all the time, I carry a few with me. We have a few in stock at every one of my radio stations, because you never know when somebody's going to want to, you know, get something else plugged into the board, or we need to, you know, change out maybe which speakers we're using. We, you know, we need an extra male or female XLR or something like that. Well, we certainly have them in stock and use them. And I'm lucky. I get to drive literally 20 minutes down the road to the factory and pick them up there from Angry Audio. But if you don't have that luxury, get you a few on order. Call your favorite broadcast equipment dealer and get you a Studio Hub adapter. Get a little selection of them. You might need some with bare wires. You might need some with XLR, male or female, or quarter-inch tip ring sleeve. And they have them in, you know, that you can buy them in several different lengths, or you can buy the little short ones and then use your own Ethernet, your own Cat5 cable adapter. Hey, one piece of advice, and if you are a Studio Hub user, if you're not, you should be. But if you are already, remember, Studio Hub was designed to use the shield that's available for shielded Cat5 wiring. It's important that you use shielded Cat5 wiring. And if you buy your Cat5 cables, your patch cables from Angry Audio, from Studio Hub, of course, they are shielded cables. Occasionally, somebody installing this will install it with unshielded cable, and they'll have some kind of a problem, usually some kind of a hum. That's not necessarily caused by common mode rejection or lack of it, but caused by not having the electronics grounded from end to end. So use shielded cable. Go to the Angry Audio website for lots of tips and information and the whole selection, including the new Rave audio mixing console, the mic tally gadget, the guest gizmo. I just installed a couple of guest gizmos at my new radio stations. Check them out. AngryAudio.com. Thanks a lot, Mike Dosh, Angry Audio, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, we're also brought to you by Max Connect Wireless and the new U192 USB interface. It's a USB sound card meant specifically for MPX or multiplex. That is, a lot of us older engineers call that composite FM. So you can get an audio processor that runs in a computer. You can get those from Omnia. You can get them from Stereo Tool. You can get them from Leif Claesson's Breakaway. There may be others available too, and you can run it. But the difficulty is getting that audio out of the computer and into the composite format. There are a couple of sound cards on the market that are hard to find, and they kind of sort of do a good job. But if you want exactly the right interface box to make this happen, there it is. It's on the screen right now. Suncast is showing the back panel where you'll see two BNC composite outputs. And there's a USB connector there to bring USB into it, connect it to your computer. Hey, even server computers have USB connections on them. So you can connect this right up. Tell your software, I'm using USB for my output, and you will get that beautiful composite signal exactly as it's meant to be out of the Max Connect. The U192 USB interface, it's awesome. It's the perfect tool for Stereo Tool. They're partners with them, but it also works with Omnia SST and with the Breakaway One product. Appreciate Josh Bone and what he's done for the broadcast industry for engineers like you and me to make our jobs easier. Okay, Tom, we got just a couple of minutes and we're going to wrap it up. I want to hear an ABIP story, dude. What you got for us?
Oh, I got a lot of them, but I'll start by saying most broadcasters, I actually try to do the right thing, and everything's usually pretty good. I mean, you find little things, and that's why we do these. But I had one at one point where I went through, I think they had six FMs and they had two AMs and the AMs were combined. So we started at one FM and each FM was worse than the next. It's like you'd walk in, plate voltage meter wasn't working on the transmitter. It's like, well, the plate voltage meter isn't working. Yeah, but I got a power meter. Yeah, but if the power meter fails, then how do you tell what the power level is without a plate voltage meter? Oh, go to the next site, and it's a nice Nautel transmitter that's running at about 72%, and you're legal from 90 to 105, and they had no clue how to raise the power. We get to the next site, like I said, remote control doesn't work, this doesn't work, and finally we get to the AM site. And first thing we had to do is cut our way into the building because there was so much growth in front of the door.
Oh.
So we get into the building, and then I had to climb over things because there was a bunch of trash and stuff in the building to get to the transmitters. Oh, and the first thing I noticed were these red lights in the corner, and I took a look, and it was the internet modem, which had a cable swinging in the breeze, and of course, there was no internet connection on it. So I said, okay, I'll play kind of stupid here. And we looked at station A. And the interesting thing about these AMs raised their power at night. They didn't drop power, which was very, very unusual in the U.S. So I'm looking at this nice, pretty Nautel transmitter, and I said, okay, so how are you doing your power change? And the guy correctly says, well, the transmitter does it because it's got a scheduler in it. And I said, okay, great. And I looked at the clock, and I said, yeah, you're 20 minutes off.
Yeah.
I said, so how are you setting the clock on this? Well, through the internet. I said, oh, you mean the internet in the corner that's not working. So then we wander over to the other transmitter, which was an Armstrong 1 kilowatt. No bells and whistles on this. It's just, it's a transmitter, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, well, how you raising the power on this? I guess we're not. I said, dude, you're only hurting yourself. You can raise your power at night. So I figured, okay, let me go out to the tower. Let's go look at the ammeters.
Uh-huh.
Walk out of the building, look towards the tower. I couldn't see the base of the tower or the enclosures for the tuning components because of the overgrowth. And there was a tree this big around growing next to the tower.
Oh, no, no.
And the guy says, well, it's because of COVID and the landscaper hasn't been here. It's like, dude, trees this big don't grow in a year.
During COVID. Yeah, that's
so.
Oh, wow.
It eventually he sends me a picture of the internet modem with all green lights. Okay, now he can control the transmitters, and he sends me a picture of the tower base and all the growth is gone. I said, okay, that's great. I need a picture of the ammeters. There should at least be two, one for station A, one for station B.
Yeah.
There might be a combined. I kind of don't care about that one, but send that one too. He sends me a picture of one ammeter. It's like, okay, which station is this? I don't know. Okay.
Oh, no.
Where's the other meter? I didn't take a picture of it. Well, you need me to sign off on this, right? Yeah. How do I know if you're on power? Well, the transmitter tells me, no, wrong answer. That's done. That's, you tell that by the current going into the tower.
Yeah. Yeah.
I squared R, current squared times the resistance of the tower gives you your power. So needless to say, those AMs didn't get signed off on. it's like
this all sounds so basic. This is, I mean, obviously no one is taking care of it.
Right. And there was another one that I went in, it wasn't this year, but it was a couple of years ago. I went in a couple of days after the national EAS test last time we did it. And I said, how'd you guys do? Well, this station didn't do it. And that was the only three of the stations in the cluster had one NDEC. One only had one. I said, okay, let's look at your log on it. And we looked at the log and it got it. It just didn't send it. We looked at the config file and the config file was correct. I said, when was the last time this was rebooted?
Oh, no.
You got to reboot it once in a while. It's a computer. That's all it is a computer. And it fails.
Tom, I tell you what, I got to cut you off because we got to go. But I'd like you to come back before the end of the year.
And
maybe I'll have a little Christmas reunion or something. But I want you to come back with some more stories. Tom, we got to go right now. Suncast, thank you so much for getting our pictures in order. I appreciate very much your extra work.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate that.
Tom, great to have you with us. I did hear from Chris Tarr. He is feeling sick. Tested negative for COVID, but he's feeling pretty crappy. And that's why he's not.
Sorry to hear that. Chris is a good guy.
Hopefully he'll be back next week and we're gonna have some cool stuff next week. We got to go. So again, Suncast, thanks a lot. Thank you, Tom Ray, for being here with us. And we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.